this episode of the History of the Christian Church on the Enduring Word YouTube channel, I have to say it's kind of a, well, a one-off. As subscribers know, we followed a timeline from the earliest church in Jerusalem through its expansion across the Middle East and Europe and even into the Far East. We tracked it through the Roman and Sassanid empires, its contest with early Islam, through the Middle Ages, into the Renaissance, and then most recently, the Reformation and its aftermath in the 30 Years' War. Now, we're soon going to check in with what's happening in and to the faith in the East, the Far East. But in this episode, I want to back up a bit and talk about churches, by which I mean the buildings that they meet and have met in. We're fond of saying that the church isn't a building, it's the people who meet there. It's those who have placed their faith in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And that's right, sure. That's the technical meaning of the church. It's what Jesus meant when he spoke of his church. But let's face it, for centuries, people have also associated the word church with that place where the church meets. I've had the privilege of doing a bit of touring in Europe. I visited the cathedral in Cologne, Germany on several occasions. I've been to Wartburg Castle, where Luther hid out after the Diet at Worms. My wife and I, we did a two-week tour of first Florence and then Rome for our 30th anniversary. And on that trip, man, we saw lots of churches and cathedrals. No matter what your thoughts are about medieval Christianity, you can't help but be impressed by the art and the architecture that period produced. Now, I know that some modern Christians, especially those of the evangelical stripe, will visit a medieval European cathedral, and they'll come away impressed at the architecture, but mystified on why people would go to such extremes to build such an immense and impressive structure. There are even those that grow angry at the massive expense of such a structure. In this episode, I'm going to attempt to explain the why of medieval cathedrals. In the medieval mind, churches in general, and cathedrals in particular, served two main purposes. The first was this. The building was a place for worship, with that worship centered on the Roman Catholic Mass, also known as the Holy Eucharist. And second, the church was a place of instruction. The architecture, the decoration, were used as tools for both of those purposes. You see, in an age when only a small portion of society was literate, church buildings became a kind of, well, book in stone, telling God's story in the paintings and the carvings that adorned the walls, and later, well, in the dazzling light of stained glass windows. Churches and cathedrals were intentionally elaborate because of the theology of the Mass, something that we looked at back in episode 58 on the Eucharistic controversy. Now, while the debate was long, the church eventually settled in on the doctrine of transubstantiation. That's the belief that at the words of a duly ordained and consecrated Roman priest, the bread and wine of communion are transmuted into the actual body and blood of Christ. Now, after the Mass, a portion of the consecrated host was kept in a container called a tabernacle, making the church into a, well, a house that holds the most precious substance in the universe, the body of Christ. It's for this reason a church has long been regarded as a sacred refuge, its specialness derived from the presence of the host. And of course, that host deserved a house, a container that was worthy of its importance. So think of the consecrated host as, well, the finest gem. Such a jewel deserves an elaborate setting. It was this mentality that fueled the building of Europe's medieval cathedrals. While churches were the meeting place of the faithful, their primary function was to serve as the location where the great miracle of transubstantiation took place. Now, following the Edict of Milan in the 4th century, ending official persecution of Christians, the first church buildings were built in the same pattern and plan as a Roman basilica. Those were civil government buildings used for a variety of purposes, but officially designated as the hall where the king or the ruler would hold court. The Roman basilica was in the shape of a capital T. Churches built in the 7th through the 11th century, a period that's known as the Romanesque, were built in a small T floor plan. The addition of that little space at the top of the T was called the apse, and that was to provide room for the clergy, who became increasingly distinct and set apart from the laity. As more priests and monks were added to the choir, the apse grew. Another major change in Romanesque churches was their roof. They went from wood to stone. Stone roofs were possible because of the use of semicircular arches that supported the additional load, the weight. Now, when arches transect each other, it forms what's called a vault. Voila, the vaulted ceiling. Now, the challenge that these arches, vaults, and stone roofs put on builders was the lateral stress that they exerted. The weight of all that stone, it had to go somewhere, and where it went was to the walls of the church. To keep them from toppling over, they were made sturdier by adding weight and width. As a consequence, Romanesque churches are massive, imposing structures, super thick walls, very few windows. In the mid-12th century, Romanesque architecture gave way to a new movement called Gothic. Now, that label was applied much later by those who, well, they considered the style kind of barbaric, and so worthy of association with the Goths, who had helped bring an end to the once mighty Roman Empire. The basic floor plan of Gothic churches remained the same, but architects used pointed rather than semicircular arches and vaults. This allowed much higher ceilings. The weight was borne by columns rather than walls, which doubled and trebled the lateral thrust on the columns. So, external columns were built outside the church and used as additional support for the internal columns by means of an ingenious prop called a flying buttress. Now, since the weight was now borne by columns rather than walls, the walls grew lighter and could be replaced by large stained glass windows, whose scenes depicted stories from the Bible and the lives, of course, of the saints. And just imagine the first time some peasant wandered into Cologne Cathedral. You know, the only church that he'd ever known was the centuries-old massive block building in his village back home that held no more than maybe 200 people. So now he stands in the plaza in front of Cologne's cathedral. He tilts back his head as he takes in the church's front facade, carved with hundreds of statues of apostles and saints, figures he has no idea who they are, even what they are. His head just keeps going back and back because there seems no end to the spires that rise ever higher, pointing like fingers towards God in his heaven. Dumbstruck that anything could be so big and reach so high, he stumbles in the front door, expecting to be greeted by the thick gloom that he's used to in his church back home. Oh no, but this church, it isn't dark. It's filled with light. You see, on his right hand is the main sidewall of the church, and it's pierced by the most magnificent works of art he's ever seen. More than that, they are more majestic than he's ever even imagined could possibly be. You see, they're massive windows of colored glass through which the light streams, and they cast images of stories that he's heard many times. These are the apostles, Jesus, Mary, the saints. And the ceiling over his head, it's so far up there he can't even see it because it's veiled in shadow. He stands there with his mouth hanging open and wonders how he's going to make his wife and his family believe the wonders that he's seeing. He simply has no words to describe it, no point of reference in all of his experience. Yes, medieval churches were books in stone. These books told the story of God's creation and the human condition. The average town church only told maybe a chapter of that story. A cathedral was an entire encyclopedia. So the story begins outside, looking at the front facade. While the Gothic cathedrals of Europe are all unique, they do bear many similarities. Most have twin towers that soar into the sky. Most are entered through three doors, a north, center, and south entrance that leads to the center aisle and the nave of the central hall. Cathedrals were built on an east-west axis with the facade at the west. And above the central entrance is a large circular stained glass window called the Rose Window. The central porch and entrance are the largest and were usually kept closed for normal church services. Those were really for the exclusive use of the king or nobles. Commoners, they would use the south or the north doors. The porches for each door were elaborately decorated with sculptures of dozens upon dozens of figures, both large and small. The left or north porch was often devoted to depictions of just normal everyday life. The labor of months and various occupations are found there. The idea was to capture the human condition, especially as it intersected the life of faith. The central porch, it was usually decorated with depictions of the Last Judgment. Jesus is seen seated in glory at the apex, judging the souls of mankind who are found lower down, rising from the dead. But at the very bottom are depictions of hell and the torment of those souls that are cast into eternal damnation. Flying around Jesus' throne are the saved in heaven alongside myriad angels. But the south door, the right-hand porch, often contain images of the elevation of Mary. Now, standing across the front of the entire facade are statues of the Old Testament prophets, the apostles, and the most notable saints, usually of that area. Now, poised above the central portal is the west rose window. From the outside, one, you can't really see the beauty of its stained glass, but the design is still noteworthy. Many of these rose windows have the appearance of an elaborate spoked wheel. If you stroll around the outside of the cathedral rather than just rushing to enter through one of those glorious portals, you're going to notice how, though the building lies heavy and squat on the land, its many spires and vertical embellishments, they all seem to kind of lighten the effect, as if they're kind of lifting the building off the ground. And those gruesome gargoyles that have fascinated so many, they aren't just for decoration. No, they served an important architectural and engineering purpose. You see, they added weight to the columns that bore the load of the roof. So figures of fearsome demeanor, they're perched outside, and they reminded people making their way into the church that while evil was outside in the world, the church was a holy sanctuary, free of such malevolence. Tourists entering a medieval cathedral today are often met by a lot of stone. The walls are gray, the stone is rough. But when first built, these walls were awash in color. The sculptures were painted, gold leaf was everywhere, and the treasures of the church were on full display. Well, if they say they were on full display when the times were good. When not so good, they were sold and used to buy food or outfit soldiers for defense of the realm. And cathedrals really were a kind of public storehouse, kept against times of trouble. Now, inside, as you arrive at the head of the central aisle, you approach the altar area and the choir, or the apse, as it's called, a sacred place for the clergy. Cathedrals were built where they were because they usually possessed some special relic from the church's past. Maybe a supposed piece of the true cross, or a thumb of St. Thomas, a piece of Jesus' robe. These relics were often kept in a special box called a reliquary, stowed away in a vault under the main altar of the church. They would be taken out and carried in procession at special events and days of the year. The back of the apse, and so the east wall of the cathedral, that was the building's most elaborate and largest stained glass windows. Now, Protestant visitors to Europe's medieval churches and cathedrals are often confused on why there are so many little side rooms that dot the sides, the walls of the nave. They appear almost as places where smaller services are held. And that is, in fact, what they were. They were chapels. That's what that was. That's where that word comes from smaller services. Now, some of these cathedral chapels were the donation of wealthy patrons and families where they would conduct their own private services. And I have to say, it's in them that some of Europe's greatest art is found. If you ever get a chance to visit the cathedral in Cologne, Germany, please do so. And take your time. There's a lot to see. And don't miss the special exhibit called the Treasury. It's behind the cathedral. Many visitors don't even know that it's there because it seems almost hidden. As a reference, if you're standing in the plaza in front of the cathedral, the Treasury is on the left at the far end of the main building.